welcome to episode 607 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Valiant Sunday episode, and I'm going to be continuing the chronology today with Harbinger issue number 2. It's from writer Joshua Dysart. The art is by Kari Evans with Louis LaRosa. We have colors by Ian Hannon with Moose Bauman, and the letters are by Rob Steen. So when we finished the last episode, it ended on a kind of a cliffhanger, so you would kind of expect this issue to pick up right where it left off. But instead, we are actually in India 10 years ago, and we see a young girl leading a what looks to be a man who's wearing somewhat of a shroud around his head, saying, "Come this way, mister," and then calling for Ijaya, telling her that the foreigner is here, and then whispering to this man that the woman that watches over the baby is super creepy. She took out her own eyes the first time she found herself in presence of the child. And then we see a very elderly woman, show herself, and she indeed has empty eye sockets. And she's asking the stranger if he speaks Tamil, which I suppose is their native language there. And the little girl, the guide, says, "No, he talks in your mind." And the woman seems surprised but says, "Oh, then you're like the baby, an agent of the demon Kali." And the man says, "No," speaking again in their minds, saying, "I assure you, Ijayi, there's nothing supernatural about the baby or me. We're simply very special." And again, the woman, you know, from a different generation, very much into her superstitions, is not convinced, saying, when people like the two of you walk the earth, it can only mean that the last era of the cycle of the world is upon us, Kali Yuga. This is why I give myself to the little beast," she calls the baby. "You know, I keep him secret. I love him as much as I can. I wait for the new beginning." Meanwhile, his guide is whispering, "Told you she was creepy," and he's removed his shroud, and we see that this man is Toyo Harada. So he tells the two of them that he's offering the exact same kindness to this little beast, quote-unquote. "Imagine me as your love manifest." And the woman's trying to warn him, saying, "Do you know what lies in this nursery?" And Harada says, "No, not really." And so the woman explains that the child has the ability to dredge up the worst things inside of you, the most horrible memories. And when those moments surface, it's even worse than when they initially happened. They don't come as simple recollections. You relive them so fully, it's worse than when you first experienced them. So as Harada enters the nursery, he sees himself playing outside his home with his mother there, right when the bombs were dropped on Japan. And he is indeed reliving that moment. He looks down into the crib and thinks to himself that it seems the monsters of memory grow more powerful over time, as he's remembering seeing the mushroom cloud in the distance and seeing his mother disintegrated by the blast. Harada is reliving this, but reaching out to the child, letting the child know that he's stronger, even as he remembers being his younger self and weeping over basically the desiccated husk of his mother. And he lifts the child up, and in his mind, he's lifting that child out of the husk of his mother. And it's the first time the child's been held. And he's able to get through to the child, and he walks out of the nursery holding the baby and tells the guide and the old woman that he's now in control. They're both safe, and how wonderful it must be for the child to finally be held. And meanwhile, the woman says, "You have him? I don't feel anything. Are you sure you're no demon?" And meanwhile, Harada asks what the woman calls him, and her response is Darpan, the mirror. Poor, horrible little thing. The world has so little patience for monsters. So as we turn the page, we do pick up on the cliffhanger that we ended the last issue with. We see we're in Pittsburgh. The helicopters are hovering above. Chris Hathaway is asleep in the house that Joe and Pete have been squatting in. She's awakened by the noise outside. But before she can kind of get her bearings and see what's going on, her room is breached by some armed soldiers. Meanwhile, we see Pete outside yelling at Joe about how he was followed. And meanwhile, Joe's like, forget it. Let's just get out of here. Screw this nonsense. But Pete doesn't want to leave Chris behind. Tells Joe to run off. He'll find him later. And Joe's like, that chick doesn't give two craps about her. Let's just go. And meanwhile, Harada in his wolf form is telling Pete that this is the end of the line. Things will never be the same after tonight. And before anything else can happen, all of a sudden, Joe and Pete feel really sick. The armed men inside have captured Chris, and they bring her outside. And Pete's asking what they're doing to them. They can't think. Harada responds that it's crude anti-Saiyan tech. They're strobing the area with phased electromagnetic pulses at just the right frequency to disrupt their central nervous systems. So there must be some kind of an array nearby that's transmitting the signal, and it's monitoring the soldiers as well to make sure that you're not compromising them. And if you find the source of the signal, you'll find the man who aims to destroy them. So clearly that's going to be Tull, who's in a van across the street and is indeed directing those electromagnetic pulses towards Pete and Joe. And he's also monitoring through cameras that the soldiers are wearing. And he's like, man, is Stanchek talking to a dog? This guy's gone completely insane, which makes him even more dangerous. So neutralize the situation immediately. So the soldiers yell at Pete to get down on the ground. Meanwhile, Pete is asking Harada for help, saying, you're not being affected. Please help us. And Harada is like, Pete, show me your power. You've been on the run for too long. Show me what you can do. But Pete doesn't want to. He says he's scared. But we do see his eyes start to glow. And Joe's on the ground. Chris is on the ground. She starts to get up. And they pepper spray her. And that's when Pete loses it. He screams at everyone to stop it. And uses the power of his mind to basically force the soldier away from Chris, the one that was pinning her down. And that the other soldiers realize that Pete's activated, and they say, drop him, and they start firing. Now, I don't know if these are actually bullets, because I think they want to capture Pete alive. But anyway, whatever they're firing at him, whatever projectiles, Pete uses the power of his mind to keep any of them from hitting him as he screams, why won't you leave us alone? You want to dance with me? Then let's dance. And so despite whatever disruptive force they're firing at Pete, he's too far gone to even feel it. And he says, right now I'm showing you what it's like to be inside my head. And they're all experiencing this high-pitched squeal. It's like, you hear that horrible screeching all my life. As long as I can remember, it's been there, raging in my brain constantly for no reason, no truth, no goodness, no purpose, only power. And so we can tell that Chris is afraid of Pete despite her forced love of him. And then Pete turns toward Tull saying, Tull, you're a coward. And Tull is astonished at the power level of Pete as he's drawn toward Pete, van and all. So once the van is there in the empty pool, Pete rips the doors off with his mind and says, I try to be good. I try to have my own life, but you just keep coming. And now soldiers and guns, and you're hurting my friends. You made me do this. And he uses his power to just erase Tull. He says, it's better that you suffer. I'm not going to kill you. You're just going to forget. Forget everything you've ever known, everything you've ever loved, everything that makes you at all. Just forget. So meanwhile, we see the soldiers are incapacitated. Tull is incapacitated. And the chopper overhead is calling it in, saying all units are down. And Pete realizes now that he's let his powers out. He can't turn it off, and he's asking for the dog. And Joe's like, forget the dog, man, we gotta go. And Chris is telling him how scared she feels and how she doesn't understand what's happening. And Joe's like, well, we could try to run, but how are we gonna run? The chopper's just gonna keep following us. And Pete says, no, Joe, it won't, as he causes the helicopter to crash into the house. But he's still saying, I need the dog, I can't stop it, I feel like I'm on fire. Harada, please, I did what you asked. Please help me. And then we see that Harada does reach out. Pete is once again inside Harada's mind in a much more peaceful place in a Japanese garden. And Harada's talking about what an impressive display of power it was. And Pete's like, I've never lost control like that before. And Harada's asking Pete how he feels. And it seems that Harada has helped Pete turn his powers off because Pete says, I feel perfect at peace, but I also feel sorry for the people I hurt, and I don't like being swallowed by all this anger. And Harada explains that the soldiers are members of Project Rising Spirit, as is Tull, and they're an agency that's actively hunting Psyots, and they won't leave you alone, Peter, especially now after all you've done. But my organization can help you. I can teach you if you want. And Pete says, if I go, will you take care of Joe? And Harada says, of course, he needs supervision. But the truth is, if you don't join us, you won't be able to keep your friends safe. There's no going back from what you've done tonight. And Pete's ready to give in. He says, I'm exhausted. I don't even like myself anymore. And poor Chris, what was I thinking? So yeah, I'll go with you. And as Pete wakes up, Chris is again madly in love with him, saying, thank God you're awake. I thought I lost you. And your friend started wigging out. And Pete tells Joe, hey, everything's okay. I just needed a little rest. But like you said, we got a split. And a van shows up with Rachel Hobson in it, who is the Psyot recruiter. And she opens the door and says, welcome to the Harbinger Foundation, Peter, get in. And Joe's freaking out again, saying, I'm not getting an unmarked van. Are you nuts? Meanwhile, Harada's telling him there's sirens coming. There's no time. Joe's freaking out. Pete convinces him to get in the van. It's no problem to get Chris in the van. She completely trusts Peter. So they get in the van. They roll away. Meanwhile, Harada uses his powers on all the neighbors who've come out to see what the commotion is and tells them that they'll remember nothing and to go back to sleep. And then he transforms back into a human form, which he never really transformed, but he just lets go of the illusion that he was wearing of a wolf. So Rachel's telling Pete that his life has changed forever. And Peter's like, I already bought the pitch, man. Just tell me what exactly happens now. And Joe's like, now they mind douche us. We got to get out of here. And Rachel's trying to tell him that Joe's having a psychotic episode and he can help her if she just lets him telelink. But Pete won't allow it, saying, I promised Joe nobody would ever go inside his head. And Rachel says, okay, but the hardest part is now you have to let your friends go. And Chris is not about to have that, still being madly in love with Peter. So Joe's like, okay, a strange hot chick who I'm suddenly allied with. Now you know why I'm paranoid, because there actually are people against me. And they pull over and we see Edward Sedgwick, another attendant to Harada, show up. He's going to take Joe and Chris away. And Rachel tells Pete that she can literally feel his pain, but they have no choice. And so Pete once again says, Chris goes free. Joe always has a roof over his head. Rachel says, yes, that's my understanding. And Chris is not having it. She's like, what are you saying, Peter? And, you know, Pete, feeling the guilt over what he did to Chris, says, I've made a terrible mistake, but you have to know I never meant to hurt you. And Chris is like, what are you talking about? And so Pete uses his power to release her, and she freaks out and starts hitting him, saying she's going to gouge his eyes out, as Edward pulls her out of the van. And she's just saying, she's just completely lost it. I'm going to kill you, Peter Stanchek. And Joe's like, man, what did you do to her? And Pete's saying, I'm going to make it right. I swear I'm going away to get my head right. And he feels terrible about what he's done. And Joe says, Pete, I can't believe this is happening, but you're the most terrifying person I've ever known. And that perhaps is just as bad to Pete as the knowledge of what he's done to Chris, as he drives away and says, no, Joe, don't say that. You're my only friend in the world. I'm coming back for you. And Rachel says, forgive us, Peter, but I promise you're doing the right thing, especially by him. And as the van drives away, Joe watches. Chris is on her knees in the street crying, threatening to cut Pete's balls off, as Rachel gives Pete a jacket with the Harbinger symbol on it, saying, here, put this on. You must be cold. It's been a long night. And next issue, we have the Harbinger Foundation. So I really feel like the first two issues are kind of the first beat of the story, kind of divided in half. We meet the players, and now we've seen what it took for Pete to really reach his breaking point and be willing to join the Harbinger Foundation. But of course, he doesn't fully understand all that that entails. It won't be until he gets there and starts understanding who Harada is and what Harada's about that he can really make an informed decision. But for now, it seems that in the battle for Saiyats, in the race, this new arms race, if you will, of the Valiant Universe, Harada has scored a huge victory by being able to recruit Pete into the program. You know, we had Joshua Dysart on a few weeks ago to talk about the beginnings of Harbinger, where the idea came from, how he came up with a lot of the story beats and such. And we talked a lot about Pete's decision, what he did to Chris, and how, in a way, Josh regretted it because of the way so many people felt it was worse than murder to take her free will. It was almost rape in a way. But we do see that right away Pete regrets it. Even before he releases Chris, even before he allows her to have her free will back, he already regrets it. He already knows he's done something wrong. And if anything, he certainly wants to make up for it. But he also, when he released her from that control over her, he could have erased any knowledge. He could have made her forget that he'd ever done that. But he chooses not to do that. So in a way, he's already on the path to redemption. He's done something horrible to her. He recognizes that, and he's not willing to take that away. He's not willing to ease her pain to ease his own conscience, right? He's not willing to interfere with her mind again to make things easier on himself. So there already are some seeds of heroism within Pete. It's just, like he says in this issue, right, that constant screeching in his mind, which has worn him down to the point where, you know, he's willing to trust Harada, even though he doesn't have any real reason to, other than Harada having knowledge and seeming to offer sanctuary to Pete. So we'll come to find out whether or not that's true sanctuary, if it's Harada, you know, plans within plans, and how Pete's going to react to that. So, you know, when we had Josh on, he talked about having a much longer form story for Pete, and he was it was one of his disappointments that he never got to fully realize the story that he would have told with Pete. I think that would have been a real interesting story to see play out. So next time we have him on, or maybe next time I get to go out to dinner with Josh, and may have to pick his brain about that a little bit. The other thing about this issue that I wanted to talk about was that early sequence and that other child that that Harada found, Darpon, the mirror. He's going to play a role in the story upcoming as well. And it's pretty interesting. I think that those are the only three that I can think of off the top of my head. Harada, Pete, and Darpan, who were born activated as Saiyats. And it's an interesting power that he has to bring up somebody's worst memory and to somehow cause them to relive it even more vividly than the first time, or perhaps just as vividly as the first time. But that person with the foreknowledge of just how horrible that event is maybe makes it worse, right? Like sometimes when you have something horrible happen to you, you may not realize just how bad it is or how horrible of an event it is until you see all the repercussions of it, right? So with the hindsight of just how horribly it affects your life and then having to relive it, maybe that's what makes it worse. As far as the art goes, the Louis LaRosa pages are done really, really well. That's the Darpan images. And it's what we come to expect from Lewis. As far as the other pages by Kari Evans, you know, I've talked quite a bit about how I feel about Kari's art. For the most part, it's done really well. Storytelling, pacing, the way he moves the camera around from panel to panel. I just don't care for the way the guy draws faces, especially mouths and eyes, for whatever reason. I feel both are too small, and the eyes are, I don't know, they're just weird looking. So, just my own personal preference. So, anyway, for the most part, the art is done well, and I think the color work is done very well. Also, it very much helps suit the mood. You know, I mean, this whole story takes place over the course of just maybe 20, 30 minutes at night, and the colors reflect that very, very well. So it is a pretty quickly paced issue, which I feel like a lot of the early issues of Harbinger really are. Joshua Dysart did a great job of really moving the story along very quickly in the first issue, and then even more quickly in the second. So it really gives you that feel of Pete being in over his head and not being able to catch his breath. It's an excellent start to the series, and it also makes it very compelling. And one of those things where you get to the end of the issue and you're like, oh man, it's over. I need the next issue immediately so I can read it and check it out and find out what happens next. So I think that's going to do it. I don't know that there's anything else I really have to say about this issue. So as always, I want to thank everybody for joining. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.